Hello.
Hi.
Good
Thank you so
morning.
much. Good morning. Thank you so much for agreeing to meet with me today.
I actually had seen your podcast. I haven't listened to much of it, but I've listened to some of it, and yeah, it had a very nice feeling to it.
Oh yeah, I have this book. I don't know if you know Father Thomas Keating. Do you know him?
I do.
Yeah. I have a book by his, and I picked it up, and the essence of it was like, be humble and wait for God. You know, and like, because you have to wait, because sometimes you feel that kind of alive inspiration in your being or something, even if it's empty, there's still some kind of inspiration there, even if you don't know what it is. But I feel totally like empty, uninspired. I don't know.
Well, that passage is very inspiring to me, and actually, to me, speaks of the sort of seed in the heart that sort of grows, and it might start out so tiny that we can't see it, but we feel it before it's even come into manifestation. We feel that sense of grace in our heart, that sense of inspiration, that sense of, I mean, some could call it God, but that sense of grace.
I wonder if you had any, if you have any kind of contemplations or anything, like something that you're contemplating at the moment. Like, at least here, sometimes, like, there's different themes, you know, that can come and go. I'm not really, usually there's always something, but right now I feel like I don't really even know what's here right now. So I don't know, maybe you have. This is how I am today.
That's okay. It's perfectly. I never have a plan either. You know, that's how I work is, you know, that's why it's so beautiful that you said that passage, because that's where I work from. That's where I speak from, is sort of tuning into that, and not even that it has a form, but that it's sort of just as you let it flow, as you let your voice sort of be taken over by life.
Yeah.
It's like it comes. But actually, yeah, there's been a few things that I've been contemplating, or lively in sessions, lively in conversations. I think one of the things is unworthiness. That was something that was very lively for me in the last 24 hours, coming up in a number of different ways of, you know, at the root of a lot of our suffering, there's this sense of unworthiness.
Yeah.
That I don't deserve to exist, and yet here I am, and that recognition of being is regardless of conditions, regardless of I'm a good person, I'm a bad person, I'm doing the right thing, I'm doing the wrong thing, all of these kind of things.
Yeah.
So that was one thing that was sort of quite lively for me.
Yeah. I can definitely relate to that.
I think everyone can.
I want to kind of put it in context, because you can talk about unworthiness or anything on lots of different levels, you know, and there's probably hundreds of podcasts out there and hundreds of different kind of, or not thousands, of different kind of books. But I think how you talk and how I like to think and look at things is it's very important that we're aware first of who we truly are, you know. And I think there can be this confusion, you know, in spiritual circles. There's this confusion then, you know, like, okay, I'm aware of who I truly am, you know. It's like, oh, it's good. And then it's almost like there's no space for like more like normal life, like human things. And I think that's one of the reasons why I was drawn to talk to you actually as well, even though I don't know that much about how you share or how you talk. But I do see it, like when I opened your website, it said something like about there's a chance, you know, if we become aware of our true nature, then there's a chance that we may also become fully human as well. And I think that,
I think they go hand in hand actually.
And I think in spiritual circles, you know, when you've been kind of around satsang and all for a long time and you're talking to all different people, it gets a bit, I think people, we don't really think we have a spiritual ego, but like, I think there's like, I don't know if it's spiritual ego or a spiritual kind of curtains over your eyes, and we kind of want to close things off or
I
something.
think it's, to me, the way I see it is there are different stages of awakening or different maturity of that awakening, let's say. There's that first recognition of who you are, but there can be a subtle veil. You talk about those curtains. I would use the word veil there. It's like there's a veil of subtle duality, even when they've recognized the non-dual nature of themselves, the ground of themselves. There's a subtle curtain or veil there that says, no, this humanness is other. This humanness is not who I am. But actually, I would say the maturity of the spiritual path is the recognition of know this too. And there's the unity consciousness, I would call it. That's the language I was brought up with. But it's the recognition of no, this humanness is the self too. Yes, it's a temporary, fleeting experience, and it has conditions. It's limited. It has boundaries. It has, rules, let's say, of ways of description, ways of describing that. But fundamentally, it is the self too. It's just a partial experience of the self, and without the deepest recognition of the in the permanent ground of the self, the unlimited, unfathomable in many ways, ground. You can get too caught up in the ephemeral changeability of the human experience. You need that grounding in that sort of divine nature in order to be able to recognize, no, this human part is not something to be excised out and gotten rid of and escaped from, but actually its impermanence is the very sort of sacred upswelling of life as it moves in us. We can't hold on to it, and we can't derive our sense of identity, our sense of who and what we are from that in anything other than a temporary manner, because then we suffer it.
I like the way you said, like, it's our ground of being, because I think we kind of have to, in a way, I don't know if these are the right words, but you kind of have to come back to that, like, over and over and over again,
Yes,
and not just
until you
like,
never leave.
and even, of course, even when you never leave, even when you're kind of not left, I think it's still good to just acknowledge that ground like over and over and over again. And I don't know if there isn't, like, because the human nature is always kind of moving and changing, and things flow into our, well, it seems like this when you said unworthiness, which I think we'll maybe get to. So I said I can relate to that, and I feel like many people can, but it's not like it's here all the time, or I'm not aware of it all the time. So it's like sometimes it kind of flows in, or it awakens in me, this kind of sense of unworthiness. And maybe it can sometimes like pull, it doesn't really pull, but there's like a sense of a kind of a, it gets our attention, I suppose, just really.
Yeah, I think it gets our attention in our reactions, but it can often be running in the background if it hasn't yet been met, not just on a mind level, but on an embodied level. Like it's in the bones of our conditioning. And so it might not be apparent to us. It might not be brought into light, into awareness all the time. And so it ebbs and flows, that sort of aha-ness of it. Oh, wow, I'm feeling unworthy. But it can be running in the background of all our actions without us seeing it all the time, unless it's sort of uprooted wholly in all the levels, in all the ways in which it is embodied in all the depths and layers of and sort of dimensions of our being. That's how I would see it.
And I think that's really important, and I think you put it in a great way, like that we haven't actually looked at it yet, like, but it can be, it's here. And of course, I don't think anything just appears like in our system, so whatever this system is here, there's never really something that comes that's like, okay, this is brand new, I've never ever seen this before. So there's lots of things, I'd say there's probably loads of things that I still haven't looked at.
Oh,
You know,
totally,
so
me
there's
too.
different different times for different things. But yeah, and that was also something I noticed on your website as well, and I feel very much in alignment with that. You mentioned something about like just acceptance, to bring acceptance. And when you say to look at things, to me that's what that means. It's like we're just, I guess, shining our light of awareness. We're just looking in a very kind of non-judgmental, open way and curious, maybe. Like, okay, what is
I love
this?
that
And
word.
curious everything.
Yeah, I think
So,
people have this idea of acceptance where it's sort of like, all right, I'll put up with it. And to me, acceptance is very much synonymous with surrender and love. These are, you know, they have their own flavor maybe, but you almost can't pick them apart fully because they're speaking of the same. And it's like where there is acceptance, there is love. Where there is surrender, there is acceptance. Where there is love, there is both surrender. You know, it's like a trinity of sort of different flavors or aspects that we encounter along the way. But really what it speaks of is a welcoming and an including of all that we are. And that is, to me, a description of the self. It's not something I need to do, it's something I am. The self, the in terms of big capital S self, you know, the way the Advaitins use it, to me speaks of the nature of existence that is consciousness, that all is accepted, all is welcome because all is. And it's, you cannot, there's no separating that out. There's no, this is consciousness and this isn't consciousness. This is accepted and this isn't accepted. It's our beliefs that say this shouldn't be there that causes us suffering because it is there. It literally is there. There's no escaping that reality. And so we suffer that then.
It's funny, isn't it? Because then it's kind of like a paradox, because everything you said is totally true. And then, you know, you can be aware, let's say in this moment, you can be totally aware of yourself, your true self. And you can feel like, okay, whatever's here in this moment is totally accepted. But yeah, we really need time. Like, I find in my experience, I suppose, as being a human, like, I haven't accepted, I'm 100% sure I haven't accepted all parts of who I am. And it's a really ongoing process. And there was
For
a
sure.
point, you know, in spirituality, you know, where I felt like this is like I felt like it was true, though. I was being honest at the time. I felt like, I don't think there's anything here. Like, it just, I felt like there's nothing here. And
I've
I
been
just, like,
there.
it's like, yeah, I just, like, if someone had asked me, like, do I accept all parts of myself, I would have been like, yeah. But, like, there's just all that's here is love and bliss and peace, you know. But now, like, the longer I'm, like, alive, I suppose you could say, it's like more and more. I just see, I suppose I'm more willing, maybe more willing to see things, even though it's a bit like, oh. So you brought up, what was the word? Unworthiness. So that's a bit like, oh, like, so I don't know what we could talk about that.
Yeah, true acceptance for me is not just the light, it's the shadow as well. It's all differentiating aspects of reality. And so it, you know, I think we can get into this sort of place, and I've definitely been there myself, of like this sense of, oh yeah, it's all accepted, it's all love, it's all bliss. And actually, but this stuff over here is just, it's gonna live in a box and I'm not gonna touch it. And maybe it's then I get so blind to and so attentive to that love and that bliss that actually I don't even recognize that there's all that other stuff there still. And it sort of gets hidden underneath that sort of attentiveness towards those states.
And I suppose that's okay as well, because, like, maybe somebody could relate with that. You know, they could be like, oh yeah, I do that. And I suppose, like, for me, I feel like I'm in a process also of accepting everybody as they are and not judging them. So it has to be that that's also okay. And just, like, we can kind of go as, I don't know what you'd say, like, go as deep as we want, or
I completely
become
agree.
more and more alive.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it's a stage that we find ourselves at, these different stages, and to recognize that no stage is lesser or greater than another. No human and where they are in their journey of life is lesser or greater than another. It's just that there are different, you know, emphasis and stages and things that are appropriate for us, things that are right for us. And when we start to recognize that, that's to me where we find that true acceptance. And it's an acceptance that even accepts any judgment that may be there of another. but comes to a deeper place of recognizing that even that is accepted, even those sort of very human experiences of judgment and comparison and all of that sort of stuff can be, there's room for all of that. And yet I recognize it's not an ultimate truth, let's say. It's a relative experience in the moment, that judgment, that sense of right or wrong, that sense of better, worse, all of these kind of things.
I find like we can't even really, I think this is also a thing that kind of goes on, at least I don't know, in my perception, that we kind of have this thing where we're judging each other's spirituality. You know, like this person is more awake and are they really awake, or oh yeah, this is, and it's just like, oh, I don't know. It's just like I feel like, of course, there has to be a place for that as well, because there's a place for everything, but really deeper than that, if we're really interested in spirituality, I think it has to come back to just us
Absolutely.
and just like what's going on within us, and that's it, and not be so concerned with how awake or asleep or deep or whatever somebody else is.
I really feel like those kind of judgments at some point drop. Well, they certainly have. I would say 5 years ago, there was very much more emphasis on that for me. These days, at least in my experience, it's like seeing the perfection in all of it, seeing and recognizing that we are exactly where we need to be in any given moment, all of us. And so at that point, you cannot possibly compare. And actually, the idea of awakening, and it to me, it comes with this, when the judgments are there, it comes with this idea of someone could be somewhere other than they are, and that it becomes very much a goal. And actually, for me, I see all of this as just a symptom of our journey that we're on. And in that way, it's unfolding and ripening in exactly the right pace for all of us. Exactly. Like there is no what if and or but. It just is. And so even these ideas of awake or not awake is like, in some ways, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I think the better question is, are we meeting ourselves? Are we meeting each other? Is there suffering there? These kinds of things to me have become much more important. You know, I've even shone away, and I think in the future I'll even probably edit my website again, because it feels, I did that website 2 years ago, and even now it feels a little out of date for me where I'm sit now. Because even the emphasis on awakening, while I do believe that's where it comes down to know our true nature, where all of this comes down to is to know our true nature, but that is not an exclusion of our humanness. And so at some point, I think even that has become less of an emphasis. And not to say it's wrong if it is an emphasis, because it was for years for me, and I think that was totally appropriate as well. But I don't know, at some point, it's also the recognition of this is all just what is playing out, and as it must play out for all of us. And we are all humans having a human experience, but we are fundamentally beyond that, and prior to that, our being.
When you were talking there, it became very apparent, you know, at any point of our journey, like trust, I feel, is very important. So you're saying like it's just this moment, and like, are we, whatever, are we suffering in this moment, or are we meeting in this moment? And that's all that matters. And we actually don't know. I have found that we don't know. I don't know how to evaluate myself, let alone anybody else. And when you do think you're evaluating yourself, like I said, I had a period a few years ago, I felt like, no, there's nothing, there's nothing. And then it's great then when life shows you that actually, no, there's loads of stuff, because it just shows you like that you really don't know. You can't make
You don't.
those answers like about yourself.
And it brings it back to that quote of Thomas Keating, that humility, that recognition of, you know, to walk in life from a heart of I don't know, from a heart of that place of we shall see. That's one of my favorite phrases, is we shall see. You know, we pin it down to, oh, I am here, oh, they are there, I am going there, I am going here, they are going there, you know, all of these kind of things. And actually, for me, it all has to have the caveat or the asterisk behind it of we shall see. Because any sort of stake we put in the sand that sort of brings us to a place of certainty, for me, there's the great misunderstanding of the mind, feeling that it is in charge and it has certainty. It knows. And actually, when you sort of sink further and further into the heart of being, what you recognize is, I don't know anything. I haven't got a clue. I am experiencing this moment as it is. But my any interpretation or any conclusion of that has to be held so entirely and incredibly lightly because ultimately I'm seeing it from this perspective at this moment. And I don't know how limited that perspective is. I cannot judge that. I don't know. I think I know. I can put a maybe, an asterisk saying this, but maybe. But to sort of recognize the utter mystery of it all at the heart of it. And there's that, there's where the heart finds that. And it's humility because you're humbled by life. You're humbled by the fact that you haven't got a clue, even when you think you do. You really don't, and no one does. And so we do our best with what we think we know. But the tighter we grasp that, tighter we sort of hold that grip of certainty that goes, I need to land here and I need to be certain. And there's the safety of the mind wanting to be certain. But ultimately, life shows us again and again and again and again and a million times over again and again. We shall see.
I wonder, can we explore something? I don't know how it'll come out, but let's see. So, like, for anybody listening, so we started with unworthiness as an example, but it could be anything at all, you know. So anything that's in your being that's, you know, I like to call it conditioning.
Yeah,
You know,
I
so
do
there
too.
could, yeah, there could be other words for it. But we know it's not us, but it colors our experience. You know,
Absolutely.
it colors how we feel, it colors how we move. Yeah, so how could we explore that? Because I guess there's a few different things. Like, one of the things is sometimes when we see things in ourselves, we want to get rid of them. And that can still be there, you know, even within spirituality. It's like, okay, no, I need to look at it so it'll go.
Oh yes. Oh yes.
And then I suppose maybe there's lots of different ways, but then we've been talking about acceptance, so we can also look at it with curiosity, you know. So not we're not really trying to even accept it then in that way, you know. You're just kind of saying, okay, it's just kind of, I think you even said kind of this, okay, this moment, what's here, this is as it is. So is there a sense of unworthiness here? And if so, like, how do I know it's here? Or how would you explore that with someone, let's say?
Yeah. So I would start from the thought. And I think for many, it ends there. But to me, that is the very start point. It's the thought. And for some, they reject that thought. So some stay in the thought, and some people just reject that thought. They skip over it. No, it's just a thought. There's a dismissal. But I actually encourage people to attend to the thought first and foremost, because the way I see it is like steam off the top. This is the thing that is indicating there is somewhere to meet, there is somewhere to be curious of. And so I use a thought like a pin on a map. We start with the thought. Okay, there's a thought there. But to me, I tend to not get too caught into the content. We can stay in the content a little bit. We can be curious, okay, what's this content? What's being said here? What's the flavor of this? But quite quickly, I would always encourage people to sink into the felt experience of that thought. So say there's unworthiness there. That's a thought. I feel, I don't know, I can't think of a specific example right now, but I feel unworthy as a general example. To me, the body is a more is like a subtler way of it, of not interpreting that thought, but feeling into and getting to the root of that thought and accepting that thought, welcoming that thought, not as trying to fix it, but as trying to meet it, as trying to listen, to be with, to embrace, to integrate, to all of these kinds of words there. And so I would encourage people to start from the thought level, but actually allow yourself to drop into the felt sense. And that might start with an emotion, which to me is a mixture of thought and feeling or sensation. Okay, so there's an emotion underneath that unworthiness. And even allow yourself to really be curious of that. Okay, why is it, does it have boundaries? What does it feel like? And these are not questions to find an answer, but they are in questions to allow yourself to observe, to be curious, to soften and open up to that which is the underbelly of the thought, that which is underneath it. And I would encourage a manner of continuing to get subtler and subtler with that. And what happens is you start to traverse into all the embodied layers of that unworthiness that ends up being a thought, a belief, a conditioning. But it's very much embodied. And what I've noticed with people is if they just tackle it on the level of the thought, it keeps coming back. Because we're embodied beings, it's not just about thoughts. And so a lot of people who are very used to self-inquiry and non-dual teachings can often just live on the layer of the thought, on the level of the thought, and they notice that these things keep coming back and they go, but I've already looked at this. I already see it's not true. And to me, this is where it was unsatisfactory for my experience, is I'd investigated all these things. Yeah, this is not true. This is not who I am. This is just a thought. This is just conditioning. And yet, it was still playing out in my life, in my lived reality. There was still things showing up. I was still interacting with life as if I was unworthy, even though I see through the untruth of that. And so this is why I feel it's so important to be able to traverse into and meet all the embodied felt layers until, you know, we get down to the bottom of it all. And there's so many layers for me, I would say that it starts to turn into more energetics, where it's neither good nor bad, but it is undulating vibrations of expression. And so there's so much that's missed in our experience, I feel. And so just guiding people to learn how to sit with their experience. And what people I've reported and I've noticed in my own experience is there's a natural pull when you surrender into that meeting, into that curiosity. There's this natural pull through these layers. But you'll always come to a place of stop, or come to a place of no further. And that's where I would call resistance lies. And most people want to muscle their way through resistance. And to me, this is where we need to attend to. Wherever we find that stop in life, this is the level in which we are needing to meet and attend to in a very tender, curious, loving, and conscious manner, I would say. It is a very active attentiveness. It's not a pushing energy. It's not a hands-on. It's not a mastery energy. It's not a doing energy. It's a being with. So this is where I see these investigations lead, is always where here and no further in our system, because there's where we need to attend to.
And I have found that, I'm the kind of person who used to, and it probably is still in me a bit, but like I think I can do everything by myself. Like I don't need any help from anyone. Like whatever is the issue, I'll just look at it myself. But I have to say, when it comes to going inward into the body and really looking at the body, like no matter how present you can be for someone else, I feel like when you're looking into things that, I don't know, that are maybe hard to be with or something, I feel like the presence of someone else who's, especially someone like you do one-to-one meetings, and I do one-to-one meetings, and there's probably many people who do, I think someone to just hold the space,
I couldn't
and
agree more.
yeah, and maybe they can just, you know, I think, I don't know how you work, but you're just supporting, I think, and like the person themselves, like you're not going to push them to do anything, you know, further. Like there's probably is some people who would do something like that, but really just to have someone who will support your own presence in that looking, I think it's like hugely like invaluable, like and needed
I
even.
completely,
Yeah.
yeah, I completely agree. It for me, the way this language I would use is it provides an anchor point,
Yeah.
because when you're traversing into these layers and levels that are you've been habitually avoiding because they feel quite painful, they can often come with a flavor of fear, and that fear can quite quickly become overwhelming. So you've got all of these conditioned layers of protection that have said, no, you can't go here. You shouldn't go here. This is dangerous. And there's where fear is. So it's for me to have that anchor point and the ability to sort of reference and orientate around that deeper holding, that vastness of being. That is sort of the volume of that is turned up when you're in the presence of those that are able to go to those depths with you, let's say. I think it really allows us, and there's some, it really allows us to be seen, and there's something really beautiful about someone really seeing you. They're not trying to fix you, they're not trying to change you, they're not trying to mold you into something other than you are, but they are bearing witness to you in your process. They're bearing witness to your depths. And it's like the way I see it is we're bringing light into those areas that have been in shadow, that have been unconscious, unaware. We're bringing awareness to that. We're bringing light. And so it's like the act of having someone else bring light to that with you, it's like it amplifies the whole thing. And it's a for me, the process of sitting with someone one-on-one. I mean, obviously it looks different depending on who I'm sat with. But for me, how I relate to that process is that holding space, is that vessel, is that meet that vessel in which I meet you meet me, and together we meet what is arising.
I feel like that's really healing, and the word also is coming as whole. And you said earlier as well, like that we do need to kind of accept our kind of shadow sides. And you know, we all know that life is both good and bad. So it's not just that when you realize what's maybe beyond both, that that's all good then. So I can ignore everything else, because I think we can jump to that.
No, there's
But
always going to be contrast, that night and day, that light and dark. And to me, actually, that is the beautiful thing of life. And when you've found that which is beyond that light and dark, what you, I believe, discover is that there becomes this love for the light and dark, for the contrast, for the undulating, differentiating experiences of life. There becomes this real sort of love and sense of sacredness towards this experience that can be so vastly different.
Yeah, something else. I don't know, you said that like we sometimes come to this point of resistance, and like maybe something in us doesn't want to go any further. And I think that's important as well. And another reason why I feel like time is important. You know, I think we're in a kind of a, we can be in a kind of a mentality of like we want to get it done. You know, if you see something, you see something in your being, it's like, okay, I'm gonna look at this now, I'm gonna boom, boom, boom. I'm gonna get through this. But like, I don't know, everyone's probably different, but I tend to be very slow at going through things. But it's a joy as well. But even now, you know, when you're talking about looking at things, and I can relate, you know, maybe people listening, they can relate. But then I'm also aware of this kind of sense on, but it's still there, and I kind of that's my mind, you know, mind, but still there, and I want it to be gone.
And
That's there
where
too.
I would go with that is that is exactly that's
Yeah.
there too. It's like, okay, can I fold that in? There's it's where we make exceptions or we go, yeah, but there's the void, that thought there, that's important, that needs to be listened to. Me, it's like it's to fold it in, to include it, and go, there's a frustration here, there's a sense of impatience, there's a thought and a feeling here that says, no, not this, I want to be rid of this, I want to this to be gone. And to me, that is part of the process too. And to be able to soften our hearts towards that one, that experience that's there, that sense of, I don't want this, I want to get rid of this, I want to have this fixed, I want this to not be here, or, oh God, I've come back around to this yet again, why have I come back here again, I thought this was done. And so it's, to me, is to include that, is to soften and include that, and where you find the inclusion of that, for me, there's where the freedom comes from, is to recognize when you fold it all into the recognition of what is, this is where we find our fundamental freedom from it, in that we're not afraid of that experience, and we're not prioritizing and saying that that thought, that feeling is more correct than the other thing we're feeling. It's just that this is what's present. Both of these seeming contradictions, these paradoxes of, I'm trying to accept this, but I'm also frustrated, and I want to accept it so that I can get rid of it.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is what we're working with today.
Yeah. And I think the more we see things like that in ourselves, we just kind of, in a way, come to terms with that life is a process. Like, it's kind of like ongoing all the time, and it is like paradoxical, because we kind of know that we're kind of, we can be tuned into that which is like totally perfect and complete and whole and peaceful and at home and one. You used unity consciousness, so we can be kind of totally tuned into that, and then there can be one process or more than one process going on, like at the same time, you know, over and over and over again, like throughout life. So I think that's kind of good, because it dispels that idea that we're trying to, there's no end goal, like, do you know, like, it's just like someone was saying to me, I don't know what they were saying something like what's it for, like what's it all for. That was the essence of what they were saying. It's like, it's just a kind of a joy, like it's kind of like a joy to, you're kind of waking up to God, but it's kind of weird, you're waking up like all the time, even when you're awake at the same time. It's weird.
Yeah, I think it's the difference between awakening as a full stop aha moment. And to me, that would be self-realization, is to go to realize the self. That's a moment of recognition. And you can have glimpses of that, and you can have an abiding recognition of that, that ground of being, that abiding recognition of, no, I am that. And it's not a position you're maintaining. It's like the whole thing flips inside out, and you recognize, no, I am that. And it's not something that I need to assert. It's a fact of being. So there's that full stop, and then I think life becomes a new chapter or a new book, whereby it's a constant deepening and unfolding and an embodying of that. Or I would use the word self-actualization there. It's like, so there's self-realization and self-actualization, and that's the thing that never stops, deepening, that human ever, it's not even human, it's just the nature of life, is to constantly expand and grow, to constantly learn, to constantly have wisdom revealed in deeper and deeper and broader ways. And that's wonderful, experiencing part of life. That's like, that's never going to end. That's never going to cease to be. That's the nature of life on that level, is constantly growing, constantly. You know, the tree doesn't stop growing.
It's
constantly growing.
Yeah.
And so that, to me, is different than self-realization, in that to realize that fundamental, what you were speaking of, that sort of that God that we are, that Buddha nature, that oneness, that, you know, all of those. I mean, I love to use words interchangeably, because I feel like you don't want to land on any of them then.
Yeah.
And I think that's what can be tricky, is trying to land somewhere, because there's a conceptual mind that's trying to grasp the whole thing there.
Yeah.
So yeah, anyone who sits with me knows that I use the words very, very loosely. But so yeah, to me, there is that recognition that is a full stop.
Yeah.
That is and you can have glimpses of that for sure. Yeah. You can have many glimpses of that, but there is a fundamental knowingness of I am this, and it's an embodied knowingness. It's, but yeah. It never stops. The actual reality of living that never stops growing, changing.
And that's like a joy. That's like, it's kind of just, I don't know, like maybe it is for something, but like, I don't know what it's for. It's just, it seems like it's just like a joy in itself. It's just like, that's just what it wants to do.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. It's life becomes very joyful. And I think the experiencing of all of life becomes very joyful, as in, not the good bits of life or the bad bits of life, but just life itself. It's like there's a falling in love with life itself, falling in love with each expression, each taste. It's like going to a buffet and feeling and tasting millions of different tastes and dishes. And it's like, to me, that's what life becomes, this sort of sense of experiencing life and learning about life on that relative temporary fleeting, but it's like tasting all the tastes of the food of the buffet. And that's a really joyful thing, to when you're no longer in resistance, as in you're no longer have that relationship to life of this should be and this shouldn't be.
Two things in my mind. One thing is, you said earlier that you got brought up with the word unity consciousness. I think I came across somewhere that maybe you'll tell us, like, how are you brought up with that word? Because most people aren't. I mean, I didn't hear of anything spiritual until I found it out of myself. Like, it wasn't in my family or anything.
So I was brought up by a mother who was a transcendental meditation teacher. So that's, I don't know, for the context of the Beatles did learn transcendental meditation, and there's a bunch of celebrities now that it's Maharshi Mahesh Yogi. And so I learned to meditate. I always forget exactly how old I was. I was sort of 4, 5, 6, somewhere in there. I learned to meditate the children's technique of meditation.
And do you feel like that was beneficial for your, like, how do you feel like that impacted you learning to meditate so? I'm just curious, as a mother, I have a child, but I haven't taught him how to meditate.
It was a very simple technique that I was taught, the TM children's technique. It's geared for children. You learn the adult technique when you're 11 years old or 10 years, around that age, 11, 10, 11, 12. And it was as normal to me as brushing my teeth, honestly. Or someone that goes to church, you know, be as normal as if their family went to church. So really, I didn't know anything else. So it's very hard to say how that impacted me, because honestly, I don't know what the alternative would have been. But what I can say is meditation has been a constant in my life, less so now. I would say life has become a meditation now, so it's less in and out of meditation as it once was. But life, meditation was a constant in my life. And what I found from that was, and I occasionally would go through phases, particularly in my teenage years, for instance, where I wouldn't meditate or things like that. And meditation just became that sort of touchstone or that anchor point. I think what meditation, and also the general philosophy around it, and they wouldn't use that word philosophy, but I would use that word of, like, that the sort of the words they use, the way that life is looked at in that manner, that was just sort of in the ambient vicinity. And from a very early age, I took for granted things that probably most people would be complete alien concepts to them. Things like, we are all consciousness. We are not humans, we are consciousness, having a human experience, these kinds of things were just very much just ambient, I would say. I went to the Maharshi school when I was in my teenagers. I also went to the Maharshi University in America.
Oh yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. Like, because if you went to the school, then because I do be saying things like that to my son, he probably thinks I'm, he probably doesn't think I'm weird. I've been saying it all the time, but I'm thinking sometimes when he goes to school, he just goes to a normal school, he might start saying stuff like that, and they'll be like, "He's a total
I went to a normal
weirdo."
school until I was 13, so I
Okay.
can relate.
Yeah.
And I wasn't living in the TM community until we moved to Skelmersdale in north of England
Okay.
when I was 13. So I was brought up in a fit, well, it wasn't normal. It was a hippie, sort of hippie-esque community in Mid Wales that I was actually brought up in. But yeah, a lot of these ideas were very much not what my peers were aware of. I don't think I really brought it up or conversed in that way with my friends and peers so much. It just was, if that makes sense. It wasn't
It does, but you don't have to
a
think
topic
about
of
it or anything.
conversation. Yeah. It was just, I guess, the paradigm in which I was aware of life. And that became much more conscious when I did move to the school when I was 13, and we were taking lessons in consciousness. We were in Jyotish, in Ayurveda, and all along with our normal lessons. And even in our normal lessons, there were principles. We would call them SCI principles, principles of the science of creative intelligence. And so these were consciousness-based principles were woven into all of my lessons, my math, my English, my science. And that was actually a really, really wonderful experience for me too, because it was a very small class, very small school. And I really enjoyed the sort of weaving together of these principles into normal lessons. And found it to be very enriching, I think.
I'm wondering, I don't know if you know, but I'm wondering about all the other people that go to that school. Do you think they are more likely to be interested in kind of spirituality and consciousness and all still? Like, you'd probably know some people, like
Yeah,
friends and stuff.
yeah, yeah, yeah. And my family member, my brother, and yeah, so I would say not all of them have stuck with it. However, once you have tasted your nature and you do this, I was doing this technique from a very early age. So I knew, even though it was a temporary experience, I knew what was being spoken of by the ground of being. When someone, well, we wouldn't use that language back then, but this I would use the language of pure consciousness. So I knew the taste of that, and I knew that that was at the bottom of all of experience. And I think once you have really tasted that, even if it's just for a fleeting second, it's like the clouds have parted and you realize there's a sky there. So even if the clouds come back over and it's thick gray clouds for the rest of eternity, there's still a taste in your system, a knowingness of your true self. So what I perceive is a lot of those people in that I went to school with. A lot of them have that in their life in a more conscious manner. They still meditate, they still, engage in life in that manner. But there are plenty who that has dropped off, but they have that taste. They know what that is. And so they're not completely blind to the fact that that is who and what they are fundamentally, even if they don't bring that to the forefront in terms of the way they're living their life. But it's always going to be part of who and what they are. There's no escaping that. And I think that I see that with anyone who has had a glimpse, a spiritual recognition of their nature. Even if they then go and they do their 9-to-5 job and they have kids and they, fully immerse themselves in quotes normal life, let's say, there's still a fragrance of that in their system. There's still a deep knowingness of that, even if it's not at the forefront.
And I don't know, maybe can I read this thing about humility? And then
Please.
I'm going to ask a question after that that may or may not be related. Okay. This is a book, I don't know if you know it, it's the Daily Reader for Contemplating Living. So it just has a little short sections
Nice.
on each day, but they're all out of different books and talks and things like that. So it says, true humility. With humility comes wisdom. Very short. The contemplative journey, because it involves the purification of the unconscious, is not a magic carpet to bliss. It is an exercise of letting go of the false self, a humbling process, because it is the only self we know. God approaches us from many different perspectives. Illness, misfortune, bankruptcy, divorce proceedings, rejection, inner trials. God has not promised to take away our trials, but to help us to change our attitudes toward them. This is what holiness really is. In this life, happiness is rooted in our basic attitude toward reality. Sometimes a sense of failure is a great means to true humility, which is what God most looks for in us. This isn't what I thought. This isn't what.
I
This is
love
really
it though.
good. It's
I
really
love
good.
that.
And it's perfect, actually. It wasn't what I thought it was
It
going to be.
is. It's beautiful, really beautiful passage.
And what I wanted to ask you was about, I don't know how to word it, but your relationship and your maybe your relationship with the word God, or like what is God for you?
Yeah.
Yeah. What are comes from?
God is such a controversial
Yeah.
word for so many people. It used to be a very controversial, well, I don't know. Early on, it wasn't a controversial word for me, but as I got into the more non-dual type teachings, the more satsang type teachings, for some reason it became a controversial word for me. But it has ceased to be a controversial word for me again, I guess. Where I sit with it right now is all of this is God. There is nothing that isn't God. And to be emptied out of one's personal self is to be an instrument of God. To be an instrument of life, to be an instrument of the self. And in that is included the small self. And there's the paradox for me that this person, this Imogen-ness, becomes an instrument of God, becomes the way in which life needs to express itself in this manner, in this moment, in all of that. So not just the good bits, all of it, all parts of this Imogen-ness is the way in which God is painting a picture at this moment, the way in which the self consciousness, the divine, is painting this picture, learning these lessons, living this experience, this expression, this taste. To me, there is nothing that isn't God. It is all God. It is all an expression of God. And there is God as is unexpressed, and God as is expressed. And you could use that in the terminology of the formless and the form, the emptiness and the fullness. But to me, these are just God at rest, God at play. Life at rest, life at play. And I used to have a really difficult relationship with things like prayer. And this is going into my difficult time with God, whereby I was seeing things, conceptually at least, in these non-dual terms, but struggling, I guess, with this sense of to whom do I pray? Like somehow there also feels this separate sense of God as not an entity, as a solid entity, but as something other than. And I struggled with that for a while because there was this sense in my heart that there was wanting to be prayer, but it's like, but to whom do I pray? And I guess to me is it is a paradox of there is other, there's a you, there's a me, there's a God, there's a person. But all of that collapses eventually into the recognition of it is all just this. Like even these temporary separations out are only that as well. I wasn't brought up Christian, but I had started to have experiences of Mother Mary coming to me a few years ago. And that was quite shocking and quite confusing to me. I wasn't brought up in a world of angels and spirits and all of these kinds of ideas. And yet that sort of stuff started to come into my life as I was, I think, indirect relationship with the transmissions I was starting to give. And it brought so many of these questions: what is God? What is spirits, angels, and other seeming entities from other seeming worlds, angelic realms? So I guess this is a long-winded way, and I don't know if I'm making much sense right now, but it's a long-winded way of saying that to me, there can be experiences and expressions that turn up that seem other than. And some people can have experiences of God that seem other than. But ultimately, it is not other than. There is no separation. Ultimately, these are just like waves arising from the ocean.
That's really good. I think it's good to, I'm just kind of feeling like it would be good to include the word God in these kind of conversations more, because I feel like it can sound a bit, like everything that we're doing, spiritually and all, is for me to experience life in a great way. And it kind of is, like, because we do experience life in a great way. But, and I hear when you're talking, it's very hard to express. It's impossible to express, and it's impossible really probably even to understand.
Well, people have been trying for a very, very long time, over many, many generations, have been
But it
trying to
is like,
express this stuff.
so like simultaneously, I feel like at the exact same time, you can be totally like praying to God in a way as if they're another, because there's a kind of a praying and like some kind of maybe feeling of whatever love and devotion. But simultaneously, I feel not even at a different time, but like at the very same time,
Oh, yes.
that like there's like a knowing that it's all God.
It is.
So
Yeah.
your
There's the
answer
great
was great.
paradox. And when you can come, I think when you can come to terms with that and have not the focus beyond to whom do I pray, but actually what the prayer is, to me, prayer is not about trying to get what you want. It's about emptying oneself out and surrendering oneself to life. And actually, in that, you become. I have trouble with this word, but I'm not sure what else word to use, but aligned. You become in union with, in communion and in union with
That's very good.
God, life.
We'll finish now in a minute, but just when you said that, like prayer is kind of like surrendering. Like, yeah, because I've kind of been exploring a little bit. I can talk to God, but I never I have this kind of thing, like I don't want to pray for things. I feel wrong, like, oh, something in me feels kind of cringy. But I'm kind of something in me is opening up to praying for things. Not like, an a car or something.
Yeah.
But more like praying for, if I have a struggle, like an inner struggle, like I can pray for help with that. You
Yeah.
know, and it seems like a very, like, I've never really wanted to do it because I feel like it's like my human stuff and I don't want to, and I've been thinking about it, but like, I don't want to involve God in this human stuff. But like, it doesn't make sense. Like, yeah. And
Yeah,
that's what
it's
prayer is then. It is like a surrender, really, because it's like you're actually kind of saying, like, I need your help. I can't do it. I
Yeah,
can't do it.
I give this to you. This is the thing, is like I lay this at your feet. I lay my struggles. I lay that which feels like a burden and a heavy on my heart. I lay this at your feet, so that I may see this clearer, so that I may be with this more tenderly. And it's almost like, we were talking about earlier in like in one-on-ones, being that witness, being that support, being that place of holding. To me, it's something akin to this. It's something akin to, I give it to you. I give it to life. I give it to the broader sense of holding in life, and so that I may walk through this, so that I may have support in what I'm struggling with, in what I'm walking through right now. That's how I see it, broadly speaking. To me, prayer is more akin to that, a more true prayer. And it's not to say you can't have prayer on a very human level, but I think once you start to get into the depths of really starting to see who and what you are in all of this, truly, this is, I think, the tone that prayer starts to take on is much more of, may I come into clarity? May I come into wisdom? May I find the holding and the support that I feel is lacking, but it's just that I don't see that yet. I don't have the clarity of feeling just how much I'm held, just how much I'm supported by life, by
And
God.
even when you're saying it there, it's kind of almost like you're tuning into that part. So you're saying, like, may I have, even like, may I have the clarity? So something in you knows and trusts that that clarity
Exactly.
is there, like in God and the oneness and the source of what we are. So by saying may I, it's kind of like, I kind of feel like, prayer, it's a feeling, isn't it? So you're kind of, something in you is kind of like tuning in or attempting to tune into that stream. You could actually have a whole load of conversations just on prayer,
Oh,
I'm
yes.
sure.
I think we could probably, or many people can have many conversations on all of this. It's like you pull on one thread and there's you can wander off into a whole other area. Ultimately, I think it all descends back down into the same fundamental recognitions. I think whatever thread, whatever way into these conversations, to me, they always point back down to ourself, and in whatever manner they do.
So, before we're finished, would you like to share anything, like, that you meet people one to one, or if you have any retreats coming, or
Yes,
if you want
plenty of these stuff.
anything that you feel like sharing, you're welcome to share, or anything else that you just want to express, if there's anything to...
Practically, yes, people can find me on beyondimagine, sorry, .com. And I do one-on-one sessions, but I do lots of group meetings and retreats and intensives and all sorts as well. I'm actually about to do a month of light starting on the new moon, 9th of February. So coming right up here, where every day people can join together with me and meditate for half an hour. Into the depths of winter in the Northern Hemisphere felt like a nice time to do that. And I'll be giving a divine light transmission in that. So yeah, be doing a month of that with satsang on Sundays once a week beforehand. And yeah, I think that will cover it. My website has everything that anyone would need to know.
That's great, Imogen. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. I feel like we could probably continue chatting.
Thank
For
you
quite
so
some
much.
time.